Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the most dramatic podcast ever. An iHeartRadio podcast. Chris Harrison and Lauren Zima with you, coming from the home office in Austin, Texas. I hope everybody is having a great week. We had a wonderful weekend. We had just had our first taste of Bottle Rock, this music festival in Napa Valley that we attended this weekend.
Taste in the wine, taste in the festival. I walked away feeling great. I will say, you know, in Napa, you're drinking good wine, and it's interesting, and it makes me question some of the wine available for consumers. But don't you feel like there's a quality issue? Like, On Thursday night, I drank a good amount of wine, and I still felt great.
It's like when you go to Italy, you can just eat all the Italian food you want. You're never bloated. You never feel sick. You have one meal here in the States, and you want to get your stomach pumped.
Yes.
Kind of like that.
Although I will say I was hydrating. I knew what we were getting into. You know, in my mind, this is a music festival. It's like going to a theme park. You know how you prepare for that and you've got like your bag and you have your sunscreen and I had my Go Hydrate packets. I love that brand. It's a little packet you can put in your water for electrolytes and vitamins. And, you know, I'm like, I've got comfortable shoes on. Okay, well, the first day I thought the boots were going to be more comfortable than they were. But anyway, you have to prepare.
Overall, you and I are not music festival people.
You know, and this confirmed that for me. In fact, I would say cemented it. Look, we'd never been, and this is no shade to Bottle Rock. Of music festivals, period, I thought it was put on so well. The cleanest bathrooms, bathrooms,
kudos.
Highest quality porta potties I've seen.
It's for real.
At a music festival.
I would say, look, if you're going to do a music festival, I've done the Stagecoach Coachella thing.
You've done Coachella?
No, I did Stagecoach.
Oh.
Same place, same venue, same everything.
Wait, were you at Stagecoach? Because there was a time in Bachelor history when Stagecoach was almost synonymous with the Bachelor world, and there were a lot of relationship drama, hookup headlines from the Bachelor world coming out of Stagecoach interactions between contestants.
I was there. Well, I did a very different version of Stagecoach. I went with a friend
of mine.
But
were you at that one?
Yeah, I mean, all of them. They all definitely manifested. During that time, stories came out. It was really interesting. What Lauren's talking about is we would go to Paradise, and which, as we shot it, usually in June, it was about a month or two after Coachella and Stagecoach, where all Bachelor and Bachelorette contestants go to die. I mean, go to influence things they're wearing and selling. So, but what was funny is the stories and the hookups and all the sex that happened at this music festival bled into Paradise.
Did you just say sex? Chris Harrison says that word so rarely. Did you ever say sex in any of your years on the show?
I said, they're doing the sex.
Oh my God.
No, I'm
but
sure
right.
I did. I'm sure I said sex over the last 20 years.
I don't know why that just stuck out to me. I don't think you said it that often.
I probably not, because you weren't allowed to
you
say.
You would say night in the fantasy suite.
Exactly.
So wait, what weren't you allowed to say?
No, I'm just saying you wouldn't go to somebody and say,
oh no, but I've just
are you
never
guys having sex.
Sure. But I've never taken you on this tangent before. Did you have words you either could not or chose to never say on TV?
No, there was one particular time, with this particular person, Rosalyn. I don't know if you remember, she was the one that had an inappropriate relationship with one of our producers.
Yes.
And I, when I pulled her aside, there were, I, when I got to work that day, there were a copious amount of lawyers all of a sudden. People I did not recognize, people I didn't know. And all of a sudden, they pulled me aside and we had very long, lengthy talks of things I could say, things I couldn't say to her when I removed her from the set.
Anything you can share about what you couldn't say?
It was just very careful about not saying basically what... saying you had sex with this person.
Okay, there,
you,
there,
like,
it is.
Hey, you had sex with one of our producers. You can't, so you, like, we couldn't allege that. We couldn't, but it also muddied the water so much that it really didn't tell the story of what happened, which was interesting. But that was one, that was really one of the times I can remember. Then there was the debacle, obviously, that happened in Paradise.
There were a lot of things that happened. But I think that was one thing. I mean, getting back to Paradise and Stagecoach and all that, it had to be hard for you guys when things happened off camera before filming, and then you had to like explain it and get into it now with cameras on, but not in a boring way, in a way that's still interesting, even though you had no footage of what happened at those festivals.
It's kind of like what, you know, Vanderpump Rules is dealing with, you know, like everything happened off camera.
Yes.
And they're having to try to tell this and take advantage of it. I think, wasn't Dean a part of all that at one point? I think he got involved in a big, kind of melee triangle at,
poor
that
Dean
came out
was
of Coachella.
Sort of labeled the F boy, yeah, of one summer.
And I think it all came out of Coachella, which, by the way, we digress. This did not happen to us in Napa. Lauren and I did at no time were we swinging or trying alternative partners.
Now he just said swinging. Okay. This is a big day for Chris Harrison.
But back to my original point, if you're going to do a music festival, Napa Valley, where it is surrounded by wine, it's surrounded by food, this is a great place to do it.
And I don't know if this is just me being, you know, an elder. I don't know, but it was just comfortable. I've never done Coachella because I have friends who have done Coachella, and it's kind of a staple if you live in the LA area, especially if you're in the entertainment business. But my friends would tell me, and from what I'd see, it just looks very hot and very dusty. And that's not for me. I don't want to pay for an experience that I feel like I'm trying to survive. And that's what Coachella always looks like to me. Now, if you are someone who enjoys that and who very much enjoys live music, then I get why a music festival appeals to you. I do think I'm an outlier in that I'm not like the biggest live music fan. I just stand there going,
one of the things we differ upon in our relationship.
Greatly.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter the artist. It's just, I sort of, again, I really enjoyed Bottle Rock overall, but we did it very comfortably. But I don't understand at a music festival or even at a concert why we are all standing crowded together so far from the artist and we're just watching them on a screen. I just think to myself, I would either rather see very intimate live music by a lesser known person, like in a cool club here in Austin, which I love, or I would rather watch, you know, the HBO documentary on the concert from my home when it comes out.
There was a moment when you and I were standing to watch Chicago's own Smashing Pumpkins.
By the way, grew up loving them. I am from Chicago. My friends had crushes on them.
We're there on a side stage, so we're in the crowd. We're you know, jockeying for position, and you're looking at me like, what are we doing here? What are all these people doing here? And my thing is, I don't necessarily love being, you know, down in the crowd in a mosh pit, but I love being in a place, whether it's music, art, whatever it is, where all of the people are there with one concerted energy and vibe and desire to be a part of this. And you share that. There's this kind of electrical
current
that goes through everybody. We all share that.
You're swinging with the current.
Yeah, you're at a U2 show. Everybody is there to see U2 because we love U2. And we're sharing that one moment. And there's just something about that euphoria that you only get at concerts. I don't get it when I'm watching Netflix. I don't get it when I'm listening to my cassette player.
Yeah. You know, and by the way, you can go have like a crazy fun night at a concert and meet new people and get into adventures. Again, maybe it's that I'm elder. I don't have the capacity for like, now look, I will also say this festival's 3 days. I think maybe if we'd done one day, But 3 days of like, we're getting on a shuttle and we are, it just took so much energy.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yes.
Was there anybody that really stood out to you?
Yes, I'm making it, you guys, I enjoyed myself. I did. Leon Bridges was amazing. Oh, you and I love Leon Bridges.
Generational talent. I mean, he is just so remarkable. If you don't know Leon Bridges, first of all, prepare to have some baby making time. It is, he just has that voice.
His voice is like honey, and he's from Fort Worth, I believe.
Oh, yeah, he's good.
Texas,
yep,
yes.
Fort Worth boy.
And well, you and I kind of made a decision after seeing Leon Bridges at Bottle Rock.
Are you about to announce this?
You do it, because it was your choice.
It was, I won't say which song, it's probably pretty obvious, but I love Leon Bridges. I've met him. He is a really good dude, and I think he's so talented, and there was a song that it came about the time you and I got serious, mm-hmm. and we've enjoyed this song over and over. He played that song, and I said, this is our wedding song. This is what, this is what I want. Every time I hear that song, I think of you, I think of us, and it means the world to me, and it just kind of says it all. It's a song I'm sure it's played at basically every wedding in the world right now, but I love that song.
Well, Bottle Rock had a big purpose.
At least we got that. And but we did have one argument, and this was kind of a generational divide. There was a couple headliners going against each other. One thing that was tough about Bottle Rock is at 8 o'clock every night, there were two kind of headliners. And Saturday was Lizzo.
Yes.
That I definitely wanted to see. I love Lizzo and she crushed it. But generationally speaking, Duran Duran was also playing.
At the exact same time.
At the exact same time across the facility.
Look, it wasn't a question for me. I know a couple Duran Duran songs, all the love for Hungry Like the Wolf and Rio, but Lizzo gave a performance. You want to talk about the standout performance of the festival. It was fascinating and fabulous to watch her because I actually felt like what was interesting about the music festival perspective is you can kind of see just the different levels of not just musical talent, but performance ability and quality of the different artists. And Lizzo gave a show. She was talking to the audience, sharing with them, connecting with them. She had choreography, amazing dancers. She had, you know, graphics. And so it just felt like
really loves the B word.
Well, hey, she owns it. Post Malone really loves the F word.
Yes. Yeah. Post Malone.
What was fun about being at Bottle Rock was we played a drinking game.
Yes.
And we drank every time Post Malone dropped an F-bomb.
Every time. And he would use it 4 or 5 times per sentence. And I'm not joking.
One person in our group got pretty drunk.
There were times he would say the F word 5 times in one sentence. Sometimes it was a string of them. F it. F yeah. Uh-huh. And it was pretty wild. Only to be outdone by Lizzo and the
B-word.
I do
not think he was outdone. There's no comparison.
But to your point, by the way, there are certain performers that are just rock stars, and these people go on to be legends because they fill the room. They fill the arena. They own the space, and that was Lizzo.
And one thing I really admire about her is she knows who she is. And that's something like I feel I'm still, like, I know who I am, but I wish I could tell my younger self to have leaned into that more. Like, she is who she is. She knows who she is, and she is that at every moment, you know? And I think when we're younger, we're trying to fit in a little bit more. So I love that she gives that example. Yeah, she was incredible. And, you know, you could see that difference. Like some other artists, when they got up there, they didn't like talk to the audience. They didn't connect. And again, me, the person who doesn't love live music, I'm thinking, well, why are we here? I should just listen to this on the radio then. But Lizzo was awesome.
We did slide over and catch the tail end of Duran Duran.
I can't believe you're revealing that.
Because I want it to be known that
it wasn't worth it.
They also have that rock star quality. Still to this day, they were still killing it. Hitting all the notes.
They did sound great.
They have so many bangers to play. And it was good to hear like 2 or 3 of those. And that was enough. But we spent the majority of the time enjoying Lizzo.
Yes.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last 1.5 years. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
oldest girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by oldest girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Also, shout out to Cardinal.
Yeah. Who hosted us this weekend.
Incredible wines. One of Chris and I's. I will get people DMing me a lot when we're in Napa. Like, do you have Napa recommendations or any wines that you love? Because I'm taking my wife there, or my husband, or whatever. And Cardinal is a wine that we are longtime fans of. You got me into them. They have incredible Cabernet. They're part of a family, Cardinal, Mount Brave, and La Coya, and we just love
Among
all
others,
of them.
Yeah, and it's the winemaker who is your male crush now, Chris Carpenter, genius winemaker. The guy is just amazing. Everything he touches, including my fiance.
He is married to a lovely winemaker named Tina as well. I've never really been nervous to meet people before, but I was nervous to meet Chris Carpenter. In my mind, he's a celebrity. He makes incredible wine. And he's such an artist. He was talking to us about how when he makes wine, to him, it's like the way an orchestra creates a symphony. And he actually listens to classical music as he's blending the wine so that the different types of wine can work together, like different strings and brass sections and all that. I was totally like sucked into that speech. I was just drinking up every word.
I get kind of geeky about
So do you have
chefs.
A crush on him too?
Yes, I love Chris Carpenter. I love winemakers. I could just talk to you for hours. Chefs. Luckily we were backstage, got to talk to Michael Mina, who's opening up a place here in Austin. Very excited about it. Jose Andres, another great chef. There were all these great chefs walking around, and I love talking. I'm just annoying when chefs are around.
Well, it's great when you can talk to them, because I don't know what to say. I'm like, absolutely. Right. Have you tried air fryers? They're incredible.
Have you seen a kitchen?
But you also, by the way, part of what we did was we had to try to blend our own wine. I'd say had to. It was a very fun experiment, but Chris Harrison was into it, you guys. I mean, he was like down, like squatting down so he could look at the wine and blending it. And it was a competition that Cardinal put on. And baby, you actually got second place.
I applied for an internship and I'm going to be...
Everyone's wondering, asking what your next job is. What was great about this trip that Cardinal brought us on was that it was a trip with all couples. And one thing that I love is... that in our relationship, we like meet new people well together. I didn't have that in my past relationships. I would sometimes feel like, you know, I think when I was younger, I thought opposites attract. So I might be attracted to someone who was like a lot quieter and I talk a lot. And then we'd go to parties and I would feel like I didn't have a teammate there with me meeting people. And you and I, we meet people really well together and we kind of balance conversation. And I just loved the weekend in huge part because every one of the couples there was a really happy couple. And that's something that attracted to me about you from the beginning was you had friends who were couples that were really happy together. And like, I think that's so important in a relationship to be able to hang out with other couples and go on double dates and group trips and stuff. But it gets awkward if somebody's unhappy in their relationship.
Because there's nothing worse than going on a group trip or showing up somewhere. And that one couple, look, it happens to all of us. You have disagreements and all that, but that one couple that just, you know, they're unhappy, you know, they're dysfunctional. It's toxic and it's such a downer and it sucks because inevitably you have that one person we all love and it's their significant other. We can't stand.
I had someone tell me once with your partner, don't give away the parts of them. And they had to kind of explain it to me, but what they said was, you know, okay, maybe you can vent a little, like we can all laugh like, oh, my husband snores, but don't give away the parts of them. Meaning don't share too, you know, when you're that couple who's like arguing in front of everyone or when you're constantly just kind of venting and slamming your spouse or your partner, it doesn't look great. It doesn't come across great. And it breaks apart your relationship too.
It gives me complete anxiety. I don't want to know when people get really personal, even in jest. When they start just saying things about their significant other who's sitting right there, things that I know are embarrassing, and they act like, oh, it's fine. It's cool. We all, you know, we talk like this. Oversharing and doing.
Do you shut down?
I do. Yeah.
My problem is,
I really hate it.
I want to get into it. And then I'm asking them really deep questions. And then we're in like this therapy session at what's supposed to be a music festival.
I told the guys from Cardinal, I said, hey, you did a good job at curating this. Cause that's the other thing. And you are amazing at this. When we go places or have a party or have a dinner party, you are good at curating the couples that are there.
Oh, Cardinal did assigned seating at every event. And I think that is critical. You have to think about everybody you know, and you have to pull together good groups and then kind of think about who's going to interact well with who. I'm a big fan of assigned seating at everything.
Yeah. And it's the old, you know, the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode of who's going to be the middle.
Oh yeah. You need a strong middle.
And Lauren Zima may be the best middle, Michael Jordan-esque.
Wow. The Michael Jordan of the middle.
Of the middle.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we leave Napa, we get back home, and we are experiencing as a couple what many, I would say millions and millions around the country and maybe around the world are experiencing, which is the kids are home for summer.
What do we call this? The great return?
The boomerang, yes.
The comeback?
The reentry.
The comeback kids?
And it's heavy, and I remember this when my kids were just in grade school, junior high, high school, it wasn't as big of a deal. Yes, there is more time at home and you got to figure it all out, but the kids were living with us. So you saw them in the morning, you see them at night, they're just now with you more during the day. There's some more hours to fill. Very interesting. This is, you know, getting into the empty nester stage and your kids come back. These are adults. This is a grown woman. This is a grown man who are now moving back into our house. And it's a very different vibe. And first of all, God knows, you know how happy I get and gleeful I get when everybody's back under one roof.
He's so cute. He has such a little spring in his step. Like everyone's, he loves is in one place and he can take care of everybody.
I feel so good when everybody's back home under one roof. When you are here, when the kids are here, I'm done. I'm good. But at the same time, you know, her son, Joshua, just walks by and his phone's on full blast. He's watching something, you know, Taylor's doing her thing. And I'm like, wow, we're not used to having humans
in
this house.
Josh is a big gamer. He's playing a video game, screaming at whoever's on the headset with him. Like, dude, turn right. And I'm like, oh my God, it's 3 a.m. But, well, you know what it is, part of it. I know you just said grown man and grown woman, but
they're not
they're
yet.
Not.
You're right.
There needs to be a word. It's this in-between phase, which, yeah, you know, if we've all also
young
gone
adult
through ourselves.
They are young adults.
Yeah. I mean, because you are legally an adult, you are living on your own, yet you are completely financially dependent, or in some cases largely or whatever, but you're in some way still dependent on your parents, even if it's for things like, hi, yeah, what's my social security number? Where do I go for this terminal at this airport? And so they're figuring things out still. And the push and pull is that when they come home, they're used to living by their own rules and on their own. And I've talked to like some of our friends who are parents and they're like, oh my God, this, it already feels, you know, it's like, on the one hand, you want to cherish every moment with them. And on the other hand, you also know there's kind of this new dynamic now where there's a little tension on both sides because they don't want you to tell them what to do anymore.
Right. Well, I remember coming home myself, you know, when I was in college, mm-hmm, however many thousand years ago it was, And I remember that feeling, and I had a job. Both kids have jobs this summer. One is going to take Taylor away from us and she's going to work elsewhere, which is going to be tough, but both have good jobs. And I would come home and I had a job. I know you had summer jobs as well, which are, I think, are really important. And it's just this very interesting dynamic to have people that are used to living on their own, kind of. I lived, you know, in the dorm room, sortie house like you did. And it's you come home and you're excited to be home, but then you're living under mom and dad's thumb again.
I think I saw something the other day that said parents need to be really careful about developing relationships with their adult kids. And it was so important to me because basically what this person was saying is when you're a parent, you think, well, I did everything for my kid. I did everything for them. And so they owe me isn't the right phrase, but you think that relationship's there. And it is, but now this person's an adult. And just like your friends and your other family members, you have to develop an adult relationship with them. And what's a little tricky is we're in that in-between phase. But I think both sides have to like peel back a little bit. Like I don't point out everything to Josh and Taylor. I don't say like, hey, could you pick that dish up? Or hey, could you do this? I let some stuff go. And they probably, without us even knowing it, let some stuff go too. Like, hey, it's really annoying when you do that thing.
Well, I think there is a dynamic that exists when you are a parent to a young kid, to a child. And that dynamic is you are a parent. You have to know what's best for them. That's your job. Their job is to push boundaries. Their job is to test the limits that you set. That's your job as a parent. And love them and be present. That dynamic, as you just said, and I think it's a brilliant observation, that dynamic has to evolve. Mm-hmm. Because my son is 21 years old. Our daughter's 19. Long gone are the days where I'm going to, you know, throw him over my knee and spank him and send him to his room.
So what do you consider your dynamic now?
I think our dynamic has to evolve in that Josh and I, we have much deeper, more logical adult conversations about work, about now it's like savings, what to do with money, how to invest, all these things that I wish that I had been told. There were some things that I kind of missed when I was growing up, and I want to impart that on my kids. And so my conversations with Taylor are different when we talk about relationships, when we talk about love, we talk about work, we talk about, you know, her learning about money and about all the same stuff. It's just a different dynamic. And that you're right. That dynamic has to evolve because I'm not just setting boundaries for them anymore. Mm-hmm. They can, you know, if they want to go stay out till 2 or 3 in the morning, that's on them.
Right. I mean, I think the truth is we don't really say no to them about anything. And
not anymore.
Right. Not anymore. And I should, and not to say, yeah, no, and you did say no, but, but I mean, I was able to come into their lives when they were a bit older. And so I always have considered my relationship with them to be one of like guidance and mentoring and sort of a higher level problems. Like my mom said, my mom used to say to me, when you were little, your problems were so easy. Now it's, you know, back then it's like, they didn't share their toy. Now it's, he broke my heart. But I think you are actually now coming into a bit more where I've kind of already been with them a little bit because I sort of started there.
Oh,
like you have to make that transition, but I've always been this way.
Because I will always see him as my little boy, my little girl. Mm-hmm. But now, though, I guess the best word to describe it is my relationship needs to be more collaborative, meaning there needs to be give and take. It can't just be all me giving anymore.
Yeah.
I need to get from them and vice versa. Like I want to hear what they're doing. I want to hear what they have to say. And, you know, in a year, Josh will graduate and let's knock on wood. He's on his own. He's gone. This is the last summer that Josh is going to live under my roof.
Mm-hmm.
Just knocked on wood.
When me and my siblings all had jobs, my mom said, okay, I did it. My job is done. You're a functioning member of society.
But you know, since you know, he's less than 12 months away from this now. So yeah, we're living with an adult that's ready to be on his own. He's just got one more summer where he's working and he's going to stay here. So it needs to be a little more collaborative. Mm. You are having an adult and I feel the same way about Taylor, but you brought that point up and it's something I've kind of done, but I hadn't really thought about it. I thought a lot more about that in my relationship with the kids this summer, specifically about evolving that relationship and changing that dynamic that it's not my job to set those boundaries necessarily anymore. Sure, I'm always going to keep an eye on them and be the
advise,
overwatch.
Yeah, be there.
But that part of my life and parenting is done. It's time to move on to that next stage, which I'm excited about. And because we did the work early on, I can move on to that stage.
Well, and yeah, like you just said, it evolving both ways. I advised a friend of ours the other day. She said that she was really sick and she's divorced. And she was really sick and at home by herself. And she was hurt because her teenage kids didn't call to check on her. They were like with their dad and they didn't text or call to check on her. And she said she like talked to them about it. And her and I were talking about that. And I was saying, you kind of have to. Because what is tough, I think, about an ex's situation potentially is that then you don't have that. I mean, depending on how good your relationship is, but you might not have that other parent pointing out, hey, your mom's really sick, you know, maybe give her a call. Hopefully if both parents are under one roof, you're seeing, but you know, so I guess their dad didn't do that, which I wish he had said, hey, did you check on your mom? Even though her and I aren't together, but she had to tell her kids that. And I said, I'm so glad you did, because it's actually like, you know, as parents, I think you want to be strong and you never want your kids to think anything's wrong. But if you teach them and tell them, hey, you know, I wish you'd checked on me. I wish you'd asked me how I was. If you teach them to care about you, that's going to teach them to care about other adults when they're in adult relationships of their own. And so I was so glad she did that. And I've had to do that with you a little bit. I think you like to be really strong for the kids, which you want to make them feel safe, of course. But it's like, hey, maybe you can tell them, hey, I had a really busy day at work today. I'm a little tired, but you never want to do that.
No, I'm bad about it. I've tried to get better, but you're right. I got that from my dad too, who was a very strong Texas man. And I wouldn't say we swallowed our feelings in our family because we were very open about our love and taking care of each other. But at the same time, that was kind of the role that we all grew up and were taught to, you know, to play. And I try to get better about sharing those moments. But to all the parents out there, whether your kids are young and they're coming home from kindergarten, first grade, junior high, high school, or your kids are returning from college like ours are, and your life has changed for the next 3 months, good luck. Godspeed getting through this summer. Let's stick together. We'll get through it together. Before we go, there is an odd headline. Someone who's not going to have any kids with them this summer, Elizabeth Holmes.
Oh my gosh.
I have to mention this story because this is bizarre. I didn't know this. I was just reading the headlines because you and I were so entrenched in this story about Elizabeth Holmes and her
Theranos, her company.
Fraudulent company, Theranos, that promised to do such wondrous things in the medical community, could produce none of them. She's 39 years old. She was convicted, sentenced to 11 years in prison. I just found out today that prison is 2 hours from where you and I are sitting right now here in Austin, Texas. She is serving her time at the Brazos County Minimum Security Prison in Bryan, Texas.
Honey, do you want to go visit her? Should we do a podcast?
She's
the most dramatic company fraud scheme ever.
By the way, I Googled it because I wanted to see how long it would take to drive over there. It's just a little over 2 hours for us to get to the prison over there.
Well, I will say from a Real Housewives fan perspective, I think she's in the same prison as Real Housewives of Salt Lake City's Jen Shah.
Well, I found it amazing because obviously she was—
I can't believe you just blew past that. Imagine the two of them like cellmates? Linking up. Yeah. What will they come up with in there?
What kind of schemes? Yeah. Well, I found it interesting because I know she was sentenced in California, but
I know why
she's serving
happen?
This. I'm not sure, you know, maybe the lawyer, she has a good lawyer who found the cushiest minimum security prison in the United States. And maybe it's this spawn resort in Brazos County and she's there at the minimum security. It was amazing that the other thing beyond prison is her and her CEO, who was also fraudulent, are supposed to repay $452 million to investors that, you know, the Theranos company at one point was worth $9 billion. And it was all smoke and mirrors. Crazy.
Why is this hitting you so hard?
I don't know why it hit me again today, because she's right down the road. I don't know why it sunk in that there's pictures of her walking in here in Bryan, Texas to the Brazos County Minimum Security Prison. So I don't—
Babe, put her in the hot seat. Interview Elizabeth Holmes.
Could we do a podcast from the—
from prison.
From prison? This would be a first. Let's.
I don't think it would be. I think there's plenty of true crime podcasts who have brought their equipment in there.
But just so you know, if you think you're having a crazy summer because the kids are home and you're pulling your hair out, what do I do? Just know it could be worse.
Well, you could be a criminal.
You could be a criminal. You could be in prison.
Oh my gosh. Well, what a great weekend. And by the way, a happy belated Memorial Day weekend to everybody out there. And thank you to all those who have served. I was very grateful to be spending it with you in Napa to figure out our wedding song, to have a couple great glasses of wine with Cardinal and see some incredible music, even though it might be my last music festival. And I'm so grateful to have the kids home. It's just, you know, you soak up every minute. And I do find myself, I have to watch myself because I want to spend every minute with them. And then you remind me like, babe, we got to just live normal lives though. Like it's
okay.
They're
not used to having us in their space 24/7.
I know. I'm like, are they awake yet? And some days they're not until 1 o'clock, and that's okay. And so it's about quality time and quality over quantity, just like time, people, and wine.
And to echo what LZ said, yes, to all those men and women who serve, and on Memorial Day week, because it's still the week, to those that paid the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms, that give us the greatest country in the world and the greatest listeners, which is you. So appreciate you being here. We will talk to you next time, because we have a lot more to talk about. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram at @themostdramaticpod ever. And make sure to write us a review and leave us 5 stars. I'll talk to you next time.
The hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life and music of an icon who inspired generations through his message of love, peace, and unity. If you missed Bob Marley, One Love in the theaters, now's your chance to watch at home. Stream the hit movie now on Paramount Plus, rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.